I don't know if you've ever sat on the front row or not, but if you haven't, these are the prime seats of worship. To hear you guys lift up your voices to the Lord as a group and as a body, that's about as good as it gets. I'd take that over a sermon any day, especially mine. Last week, Trey, he gave us the opportunity to listen to a parable of Jesus that challenges us to be a good Samaritan, to be that compassionate person that Jesus needs in his kingdom. What a powerful, encouraging message. Today we're going to look at another parable of Jesus. Another very challenging message. And I think it's going to go to the core of who we are as a people. Not so much as a Christian people, but as a culture that we find ourselves in. Because Jesus is going to share a message about what we all call the American dream. Three people that we look up to. Elon Musk. Child of divorced parents from South Africa. Began his walk as a young adult in the entrepreneurial by selling his first video game. Proceeded to this point of being the CFO or the CEO of Tesla Motors and SpaceX. And now he's worth $193 billion. Oprah Winfrey. A hero among women for many of us. Of someone who started out from humble, single mother, suffering, poor in Mississippi. Striving to be who she wanted to be. Became one of the most powerful African-American women ever. And her worth is about $3 billion. And the last one, many of us would know him as Bezos. Early on in his life, he was born to a Cuban immigrant. And in that process, he began to draft out his future. And in his own garage in 1994, put the business plan out for Amazon. And now has become one of those people that everybody wants to be like him because he's worth almost $200 billion. We've all heard these stories. We've all seen these people. We've all looked at them in movies and we read autobiographies about them. And some of us even get to live that American dream. Our culture holds them up as these heroes in our society. These are athletes. They're singers. There's movie stars. There's philanthropists. There's even politicians that have come to live this American dream. But our culture upholds their drive, upholds their success as something we must achieve. The Oxford English Dictionary actually defines the American dream as the idea that every citizen in the United States should have an equal opportunity to achieve success and prosperity through hard work, determination, and initiative. My question this morning is, have we ever stopped to think and evaluate to see, is the American dream really what Jesus calls us to be about? Have we evaluated the underlying attitudes and motives of the American dream? The problem with the American dream is it's not just here. The American dream has spread throughout the world, and it spread throughout the decades. Because we're going to see that Jesus, all the way back in the first century, is going to share a message that he wouldn't call the American dream. But we know that's what he's talking about. And that's where we're going to go this morning in Luke chapter 12. So open your Bibles to Luke chapter 12 as we go into this story that Jesus is facing that's going to challenge us about our motives and our attitudes. Let me set the scene for you. We seem to be at a pivotal point in Jesus' ministry. He's teaching right now about the kingdom of heaven and what is to come and what it's all about. And it's almost like one of these political events that everybody's getting excited, everybody's on fire, everybody's just riled up about what Jesus is saying. And out of the background, you hear a man yell out to Jesus, says, "Jesus, tell my brother to divide the inheritance and basically give me my part." Jesus teaching. And this is such a powerful challenge to Jesus. He stops what he's teaching and turns to the man and he says, "Who made me judge over you?" Now, we don't know why this man chose to yell this out. We don't even understand what his background is. We're not quite sure why he's chosen Jesus to do this for him. But here he is. He's listening to the message of the kingdom. But his mind is somewhere else. His mind is about, "I just want my piece of the pie." And so when Jesus says, "Who am I?" he turns back to his disciples and he says this: "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist of the abundance of possessions." Jesus knew what his motivation was. Jesus basically says, he's greedy. He's greedy. And he says, beware of greed. Greed and covetousness, and some versions will use the word covetousness in that, is this insatiable or this excessive desire for wealth and possessions or prosperity. We would call it materialism. And the idea that it carries is that this materialism, it drives everything about a person to be rich, to be popular, and to be successful so that we can be happy, so that others will like us, and so we'll feel worthy. And it takes material possessions, physical comfort, and other people's approval, and puts it above spiritual things. Now, let me clarify. Jesus is not talking about that material things or having things is a bad thing. He's talking about this drive and then this insatiable striving after those things that is the problem. The problem is not the things. The problem is not money. The problem is that we are discontent with where God has us. Or the problem is that we are discontent with what we have. And the problem is that we strive for those things over the striving of the relationship with God. So what we see, the problem is not things or not money or not wealth. The problem is the attitude that surrounds the search of those things. And the reason I say that is because I can be as poor as all get out and still be extremely greedy. But I can be extremely wealthy and at the same time not be greedy, because it's not about the things. And we know that Paul tells Timothy that the root of all evil rests in the love of money. Not the money itself, but the money or the love of that money. So here's what we see. Is we see that Jesus is basically telling them, and I think the message carries to us today, he says, beware not of wealth, but of the insatiable desire to get it, so that you can be happy. And that's the story, or that's where we find ourselves. Now he tells a parable, and in this parable he's going to tell the story of a man who is blessed beyond his means. And when he's blessed beyond his means, he really is not sure what he's going to be doing. But we see that in his life, he then puts in motion a mechanism that drives his life, drives his choices because of that greed in his life. The first thing we see in this young man's life is that the story is that when he receives this wonderful blessing, he looks at the wonderful blessing and he says, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and I will build bigger barns than the ones I had. As soon as he gets blessed, he decides that he's no longer focused on the blessing of the crop or the blessing of what God has given him, but he's decided that he needs something bigger and better. His goal no longer is about contentment. His goal is about having bigger and better things. No longer is he satisfied with what he has, but he wants more. Now, is it wrong to have things? Absolutely not. But when our life's choices are influenced by materialism, we've got a problem. That's number one. The second thing we see in his life, that once he gets this gift, and once he has this direction and this movement of his life goes towards the materialism, the second thing we see that materialism is going to drive the choices that he makes. Because he says, I'm going to build them so that I can store up for myself these things. He had a choice to make. With this abundant crop, he had a choice to make. And his choice was, well, he could have given it away. He could have sold some of it. Or he could have just shared it. But he chose to do it and keep it all for himself. He chose to change his focus and not be content, but to decide this is all mine and no one else's. Is it bad to have things? No. But when those things influence my choices in life, we've got a sin issue. But the third thing is that we see that in his life, as he looks at it, he says, once I get all this built and once I store it all up for myself, I'll get to the point in my life where I can say, you know what? I've arrived. I've finally got everything I need. You know what? I'll just eat, drink, and be merry. He went from the priority of the crop to the priority of thinking that he's good just the way he is and that his security lies in what he has. But we know, you continue reading the story, it doesn't take long for that very night, it says that God comes to him and God says, tonight your life is given, I'm demanding your life. And all that you have, all that you're about, all this wealth that you've accumulated, guess what? Somebody else gets it. Not you. Because your life is demanded of you tonight. So what he thought was his security, what he thought was going to be the thing that would hold him by, that he could just be okay. God says, because of this, you've just gone from a rich ruler or a rich man to a foolish man. Because you put your security in your wealth. So back to the question, is it wrong to have stuff? No. But it is wrong, or it is bad, when our security comes from those things. Okay, so we see these three things that this man did. But Jesus sums up the whole story of this parable with this phrase, and I like the way the New Living Translation puts it. He says, yes, any person is a fool that stores up earthly wealth but not have a good relationship or a rich relationship with God. It wasn't necessarily about the man and his misguided direction. It was about the need for a good relationship with the Lord. So what do? We live in a society that strives towards wealth. We live in a society that pushes us towards the American dream. So the question comes to me, and I'm like, okay, so what do? How do we be wise instead of be foolish? Because the foolish is all who search for material things. How do we store up a rich relationship with God? How do we have the right priorities in our lives so that Jesus and God become the primary objective? Or in other words, how do we guard against all kinds of greed? And this is what I want to leave you with, are these four things that God, or that Jesus, I think we can extrapolate from this. The first one. The first way we can avoid and counteract greed in our lives and greed in our society is learn to practice gratitude. If you look at the story, go back to the very first verse, and it says that Jesus told a parable, and the ground of a certain rich man gave abundant yield. You notice that it never mentioned the effort of the rich man? It never once mentions that he did labor so that his ground produced. Where did it come from? From God. It came from the ground. I don't think that's an oversight when he puts it that way. Because God, in his essence, has blessed us as a people. When we focus on us, or we focus on what we've done, we see and we strive after greed. But when we can focus on God, we are able to be freed from that. He took God out of the equation. Did you know that statistically, 88% of the people who live in the U.S. are in the top two categories of the most wealthiest people in the world? 88%. So should we be about blessing or giving God the thanks for the blessings? James tells us whatever good and perfect gift, where does it come from? It comes from God. Down from above, from the Father. And he tells Paul tells the brethren in Thessalonians, he says, give thanks in all circumstances. Give thanks for what Christ has done for you. Give thanks for what you have. Give thanks for that you had a good day. Give thanks that you had a bad day. Because if we will learn, the way we counteract materialism in our society and in our lives is to be thankful. Number one. We be thankful. Because we're focused on Him and not us. It's not happy people who are thankful, but thankful people who are happy. The more we can be thankful with our goals, our choices, our securities in life, the more we store up in a relationship with God. The second practical thing that you can take home with you is that we need to learn to invest in people. The parable, when he got more, what did he do? He decided to buy more stuff or get more stuff for himself. He decided to look for extras and make it bigger and better. Is that not the way our society works? The more I get, the more I want. The more I have, the more I need. Now, let me say this. Buying stuff on credit and going into debt is the appearance of abundance when it's really not. So it's materialism, just like buying more and more and more. What about our clothes? Did you know that somebody calculated the statistics of how much clothes one American family throws away a year? And it's 81 pounds. Is my iPhone 14 not good enough anymore because I need the iPhone 15? Is my 52-inch LED TV not good enough anymore because I need the 86-inch 4K LED TV? Is my house not big enough? Is my car not fast enough? So I think our culture is going to move us to invest in stuff. So the way we counteract that is we learn to invest in people. Jesus did it. Jesus did it when he was striving for his ministry. He chose 12. But we know the story of Peter, James, and John. And when he takes them in, he goes and he calls them from their dad and from the business that they're working on to do something else with them. And so Jesus invested in them. So what does that look like for us? What does investing in people look like for me? Well, it could be as simple as, hey, take someone to lunch, you pay the bill, and talk about spiritual things while you're at lunch. It could be, wow, this book really encouraged me in my spiritual walk. Let me buy one for one of my friends or one of the people I know. It could be as giving generously to young people and to elderly people and whoever wants to go on a mission trip or whoever wants to go through AIM or whoever wants to go through Sunset or find some other ministry that they're doing, give generously to them. Or it could even be find someone who's in need of a little help with their marriage and send them to a retreat and you pay the bill for them to go. I think I know somebody who does that around here. So basically what I'm saying is to invest in people means that I don't wait for church ministry to take care of everything. I take out of my own blessings, out of my own profit, in my own success, and I get involved in the lives of the people who do that. Just do it yourself. If we will learn to invest in young people, we will learn to invest in young families, in couples, in elderly couples, Christian or non-Christian, with the purpose of bringing them closer to Christ and closer to salvation, it matters. The third thing, and I'm going to run out of time. The third thing, prioritize your stuff, your relationship over your stuff. The rich man was all about his stuff, not about the people around him. I ran across a post this week. It came across my feed this week about a guy who's struggling with reminiscing about his life, about having how much he'd given to work and how much he'd given to his career and not given to his family. And he says there's three principles that he knows, but he didn't apply. And that is, time is more valuable than money. Work will always be there, but your family won't. What is important is to be present and be involved. So as we look at counteracting materialism in our lives, let's remember that concept. Let's not be the 70-hour week people who work every day, every night, so that we can buy our kids stuff. Let's be one who sacrifices a little of that monetary gain so that we can just spend time with them. Let's put sweat equity into ministry. Let's go and sit around our own tables and eat with people and build that relationship and that hospitality around our own tables and not just contribute to the consumerism of eating out. And that list could go on. Those are just ideas. But we do know that Jesus came to the house of Zacchaeus, and when he came to the house of Zacchaeus, Zacchaeus' priorities changed because Zacchaeus needed that experience and that relationship with Jesus to set his priorities straight. So let's be like Jesus in that process. And the fourth one that I think is so hard for us is to learn to live Christ for today. Or learn to live today and not tomorrow. There's a song written by, in Alabama, the country band sings it, and it talks about start living. A guy's going through his life, in every stage of life, he just longs for the next stage so that he can really start living. In college, then he goes into work, and then he goes into the possibility of retirement, and he goes through that process over and over again, and finally in his retirement days, he thinks he's about to start living, and the doctor says, there's nothing we can do for you. And he realizes that he's never really going to start living. And what a loss and what a waste for all that has gone on. James says that who are we? We make all these great plans, and we all figure it out, and we all try to make it line out, and we all want to be profitable in this and that. And James says, what is man but a little mist? Here today and gone tomorrow. Now, I'm not saying don't provide and don't search for your retirement. I think planning for retirement and for the future after I quit working is a wise choice. But if that drives us so that we miss out on what's going on today, we've missed it. It doesn't really matter how big your nest egg is for the future. Because when God calls you home, whether you're set for life or whether you're living the day to day, it really only matters if you've made an afterlife investment. So live for Christ today, because that fills your storage tank in heaven. Now, Jesus has told us this parable. He's told us that we need to watch out for greed. He tells us we need to invest in our relationship with the Lord outside of the material things of this life. He told us we need to focus in the right place and put those right priorities in our life. But Jesus is not the only one who says that. Look what Paul tells a young man, a young preacher. He says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant nor put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. In this way, they will lay up a treasure for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age, so that they may take hold of the life that is the true life. We're called to be Jesus, which means we have to learn to get our priorities straight and invest in a relationship with the Lord. And we live in a society that fights against that with all its materialism. So let's be a people who practice gratitude, invest in others, prioritize relationships over stuff, and live for Christ today. And we can make a difference in a materialistic world. I struggle with materialism. I struggle with wanting nice stuff. And I don't know where you are. I just know it's a big, heavy burden that I carry that I want my children not to understand, but it's part of the life we live in. But together we struggle with it, and we fight against it, and be on our guard against greed and materialism. Because together we can fight and be who God needs us to be. So if you need the prayers of this congregation, there's a group of people who will do that with you. So come as we stand and sing.